Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth. And another exciting episode we have for you today. We are bringing you this episode from the Armstrongs' home in Pleasant Grove, Utah. A great episode today about the trans topic, the experience with the Armstrong family as they navigated their journey with their son Tyler coming out as trans, and his journey through growing up, his peers, his church community, and ultimately the decisions that have led him to where he's at today. A fascinating episode about understanding the topic of the trans topic, and also what it takes to love and love unconditionally and accept people exactly as they are. The Latter Gay Stories podcast is made possible through generous donors, through viewers and listeners just like you. If you are compelled and feel the need to support the Latter Gay Story podcast like many others have, we invite you to make a donation to the podcast. You can make a donation through two simple and easy ways. First, by donating directly through the website at lattergaystories.org, or making a donation through text by texting us. You can text the word stories, STORIES, to 77948. That's stories to 77948. And your donation will assist us and help us to continue bringing stories just like this one and others to the Latter Gay community as a whole. Well, without missing too much of a beat, we want to welcome the Armstrongs to the podcast. Thank you, Drew.
Thanks, Kyle.
Tyler?
Hi.
You excited for this?
Yeah.
We're excited to hear your story. Drew, first, tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe what you do, just a little bit about your family, and then we'll jump into Tyler's experience and then right down that trail.
Okay. I grew up in Salt Lake County, went to Granite High, and then I came down, went to BYU, and kind of never left Utah County. I'm a real estate broker here in Utah County. I've been doing that for about 24 years. We've been in the same house for about 18 years. We're going to move this year, finally. And let's see, Tyler was born the year of the Olympics, and we had just moved into the house. And so within the few months before. Well, so yeah, that's about right, because Tyler's just turned 17 in January. So we've been kind of in the same neighborhood, same house, same location for a long time. Tyler's mom and I got divorced when Tyler was six, and Tyler is with us some of the time, but not all the time. He lives up in Cache Valley. So there's that. Tyler actually coming out was in a weird way was kind of instrumental in his mom and I splitting up. Wasn't anything due to Tyler in any way, but kind of due to a confluence of religion and realizing that we had an LGBT kid even that young. So that's a weird story, but it happened. At this point, Tyler's got two quite supportive parents and family, and his mom and I had a terrible divorce, but I think we're okay at this point. And last year we went, and first thing we really did together is we went and showed up together and went and helped Tyler get his name and gender marker changed. So that was a good thing. And so that's a little bit about us to begin with, about me to begin with.
You didn't even throw in about your photography. Oh. That's one of the best parts about Drew.
I love photography. I love aerial photography. I love still photography and architectural and landscape stuff. And that's, you know, it's something that's related to what I do as far as work goes, but I enjoy doing it, just for fun. That's kind of a hobby. Tyler's actually pretty good at it, but he's like, Dad, he's actually a really good photographer, but he's a teenager, so he doesn't really like to do whatever Dad's doing, so, right?
Let's kick your dad out of the business, let you shine for a while, and then... Some of the most stunning temple photos that I've seen are stamped with your name on them.
I really enjoy that. I've done about 25 of the temples so far, I think. So got them all on my website. If you're interested, it's drewarmstrong.com. I'm not trying to sell anything. I really don't sell anything. Someday maybe, but people have asked, but I don't really have it set up to even do that. So
I'm okay with the plug. I think your work's pretty fascinating.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty talented. Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Tyler. I'm obviously the trans kid. I think we figured that out by now. I was born in Pleasant Grove till about 6, where I moved to Cache Valley. I've been raised there ever since. And I visit my dad periodically every other weekend. I'm currently a student at Skyview High School, a junior. Can't wait to graduate. It's going to be great. I enjoy all of the basic teenager things. I love snowboarding, video games, rap, and cars. So I don't know. I'm just figuring it out as I go. And I think
he's a pretty normal boy.
Goes. Yeah. Yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah. So
Drew, let's jump back 17 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 14 years ago. When did the journey, this journey begin where you found out or maybe even realized I might have an LGBT child?
That's really interesting because, nobody can imagine a little kid coming out and saying, hey, I'm gay. They don't even know what gay is, right? Or I'm trans or anything like that. It was interesting, but I think I count it as, in this journey, one of the greatest blessings for me was the fact that Tyler came out so young. Because for me, it's never been one of those things, and I watch other families go through it where they're like, oh, well, maybe it's just a phase, or maybe it's they're rebelling, or this is teenage rebellion, or this is a decision that they're making or anything like that. Tyler was 3, but it wasn't a surprise to us because Tyler was, he was 3, but he had grown up. Up to that point, it was literally play with the little boy cousins with Nerf guns when they came over, even when he was very young, when he crawled around. We had the Fisher Price farm and the garage and stuff, and he'd crawl around with a car in his hand. And that was, it's not like he never played with anything that was female, but he definitely had kind of a draw or an attraction to the swords and heroes and stuff like that. I remember one time where out of construction paper, and this was totally typical, but he cut a belt and a bandolier and epaulets, and he stuck them on his jammies with tape on so he had the shoulder boards and the epaulets and everything like that so he could be a prince. And one time when he was 3, and this is when he actually really voiced it, but it wasn't, we kind of, both of us knew that there was something different. I had, my business partner, best friend, was like, dude, what happens if Tyler turns out to be gay? Because I kind of think he is, and I'm like, no, you're wrong. He's just, learning and becoming who he is. I don't think so, kind of thing. When he was very young, but when he was 3, we were, here in this house, and my ex-wife and I were out doing yard work in the front yard, and Tyler had disappeared. We when you have a 3-year-old, you have to check in on them every once in a while, see where they are and what they're up to, make sure they're not in trouble. And so I'm like, I better go check. And so I come inside and I'm like, Tyler, where are you? Except it was Lexi, the dead name at this point. I'm like, where are you? And no answer. And then they're in trouble, right? They're up to no good. And
no, they're not in trouble. You're in trouble. You're the one who has to clean up the mess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I found him in our master bedroom closet with a pair of scissors, and he'd cut off all his hair. He'd given himself a full haircut. Yeah. And I went in there and I said, Lexi, what did you do to your pretty hair? That's what I said exactly. And he said, well, Dad, I want to be a boy. And I said, you want to be a boy? We said, why do you want to be a boy? He says, well, Daddy, I want to be a prince. And that was just the explanation for this, of course.
The only, 3-year-old.
Yeah,
that's all three. I can make sense of. Yeah.
So we took him to the salon, and they did their best to kind of clean him up and give him a semblance of a normal haircut. And it's funny because a haircut was also a sort of kind of a key part of him really having to come out. I mean, we were clueless Mormon parents. I was in a Elders Quorum presidency at the time, and we had no idea what was going on at that point. And so he kind of ended up having to come out again when he was 11, 12 later, and getting a short boy's haircut accidentally. Mm-hmm. Wasn't accidentally for him. The stylist at his aunt's salon thought she was doing his mother a favor because he looked like a boy.
Everyone thought, with long hair. Point, all the time, regardless of my female, semi-female appearance from day one, I remember in school constantly being asked if I was a girl or a boy.
Yeah, he got misgendered constantly. Yeah. But so that happened, and then for the next probably 3 or 4 years, when he really didn't have control of his wardrobe or anything like that, he would wear costumes. And he had a Prince Charming and a Prince Philip and a Prince Eric costume. And he had the Red Power Ranger and Spider-Man and Robin Hood, all these male like costumes. And he'd wear those literally probably, you know, if he was home from school, it was into a costume probably for kindergarten and first grade still, probably all the way until he was six. But that's how he controlled the way he dressed and his appearance. And then when he got to be a little older, then he could start requesting things, wardrobe items and stuff. And he'd wear basketball shirts and jazz and junior jazz. And he had a Broncos shirt, and he had a Green Bay Packers jerseys and stuff like that. And that he'd wear sports clothing because that's what he could get away with. And eventually he started even requesting I want to buy boy clothes in the boy section, and shopped in the boy section of this store.
Still a constant battle, though, dragging mom. We'd go into a shop, get clothes, shopping, and I used to hate it because I knew every single time that it would be a conflict of she'd start going off to the female section and I'd be walking off to the boys, be like, where are you going? You know, and it was just...
And I was okay with him. And so I think that's one of the things, he always wanted to go clothes shopping when he was at dad's house, you know. Because I was like, yeah, sure, what you want to wear, that's okay. But you know, that started changing the way I thought about it, because I was going, I don't know what I'm going to end up with. And I mean, I'd have this discussion with people all the time. They'd say, well, what if Tyler does turn out to be gay? And I didn't even think about transgender. And I was like, you know, I think I'm going to be okay with that. And his mom and I both started doing our own like research and study into this. And I kind of thought I was going to get a butchy lesbian daughter. And that's, I didn't even think transgender at that point to begin with. But eventually my business partner, he left the church and got divorced over it and over leaving the church. And in 2009, so it was, we were both still single at that point, but we put together a Pride Parade entry that was called Straight Guys for Equal Rights here in Utah. And we got about 200 or 300 t-shirts that said, you know, they're white t-shirts with a big blue equal sign. It said, like, I'm straight and I support equal rights, or I'm a dad and I support equal rights, or I'm Mormon and I support equal rights. And then we put a big banner out front, and we walked in Pride, and I'll tell you, you know, I mean, the kids were, I mean, at that point, you got to realize that PFLAG, Prop 8 just happened, and PFLAG wasn't, they didn't even have an organized chapter in Utah at that point, and there was no Mormons Building Bridges, and there was no, you know, I mean, Affirmation didn't do that kind of thing, and so we were like the only walking group, and somehow I got finagled into carrying the banner, the end of the banner in the front. And we walked, as we were walking along, these kids would come out of the crowd and come, I got to keep it under control here, but they, because it always makes me cry to talk about it, but they would come out of the crowd and give us hugs and tell us, you know, I wish my parents would do this. I wish they would be here. And you know, I did that by myself, and Tyler didn't even know. And I didn't talk about that with Tyler. And I didn't because his mom was blaming me for Tyler being the way he was to some degree.
Was she blaming you because she felt like you were enabling?
Yeah, an enabling kind of thing. As we walked, and I'm holding this banner, and these people are coming out, kids are coming out of the crowd, gay kids and stuff, and they're giving us hugs, and they're crying. And I cried all the way. I was exhausted by the end of that walk because I was just bawling the whole way through it, because you'd see these kids that, you know, they didn't have support from their families at home. And, you know, we were carrying the signs and walking, I think for a lot of them, it was the first time that they ever saw a group of allies and parents that would come and do that and support them. And it was quite the experience. So we did that for a couple more years, and then Mormons Building Bridges and Mama Dragons and everything kind of came out. And I mean, I remember when Wendy Montgomery wrote the first thing that she did about her son coming out, and I reached out to her, and kind of we immediately became Facebook friends at that point and stuff. And I didn't have a LGBT kid officially at that point yet, you know, but I kind of anticipated that it was coming, and his mom knew that that was the case. And about a year after we got divorced, his mom said, I think the kid should be able to go to counseling. And I'm like, geez, as acrimonious as this divorce has been. And we never had a great marriage. She said, I was like, as bad as this has been, I think that's a great idea. I think that they should go to counseling. And what I didn't realize is that I think what she was saying is that I'm already taking him to counseling, and I'd like you to participate in paying for it, kind of thing. And so she had been taking Tyler to LDS Social Services, and we had joint legal custody. And so when I found out that they'd already been going, I'm like, well, send me all the records. I'm going to participate in this. And so I got it, and I remember, I still have the paper. I remember very succinctly that I got the paper where it starts talking about the intake and what the problems were, and that Tyler was being seen for gender issues, and also it said in there, it just like was like shocking to me. It said, "Mother suspects father of sexual abuse," and I was blown away, but it hit me. It's like, that's why she divorced me here. I had no idea that, I mean, you know, we never had a great marriage, but at the same time, I was like, wow. If I thought that my spouse was abusing my kid, would I divorce him? Yeah, of course. You know, there are very few reasons that you give up on a marriage, but if that's real, that's a good reason, you know. But, you know, we both read stuff, and in Miracle of Forgiveness, it says that the three reasons that somebody ends up LGBT, of course, are too much masturbation or pornography exposure or sexual abuse. And it's like when you've got a three-year-old that you realize that this is going on, or a six-year-old, obviously Tyler wasn't into porn and obviously wasn't masturbating too much. And so, you know, if you read that and you go, the prophet said this, dang it, what's the only logical thing that's left in there, and nobody else has access to her kids, is must be sexual abuse, and if it's not me, then it must be him.
The very last item on the checkbox.
Yep.
I still remember, too, going to those counselors wondering as a little kid, like, why am I even here? What's the problem here? You know, like, she's trying to, I remember she'd play board games with me and stuff, trying to just kind of get me to talk, and I'd sit there just being like, look, lady, like, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't know what the issue is. You know, my mom thinks something's wrong with me, but I'm fine. I'm just living my life, you know. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was completely oblivious to everything going on. I'm just a little kid, but, you know, I just remember, like, her trying to talk to me about, there was a point in my transition, well, like, before, that I had issues with seeing other boys with their shirts off. I thought it made me, like, uncomfortable. And at the time, I think maybe my mom thought it was something with sexual abuse, but now I look back at it and it's probably more so of jealousy that I couldn't do it, you know, mad that they had that privilege that I wanted, but social boundaries, you know, restricted me from that. And I hated that because I was being seen as something that I didn't want to be seen as. And so I'm sitting here and she's trying to talk to me thinking that I'm uncomfortable with sexual things, where I'm just like thinking, you know, I'm just a little kid that knows I wish I could do that, but I couldn't really express myself in that way. I didn't have the words or the understanding at that point to tell her why I felt that way, you know? And I think since then, I still just remember sitting in that counseling office over and over as a little kid, and I'm like, I honestly don't even know why I'm here, you know?
The only time we'd get him into a dress was like to take him to church. And then it was after half an hour of a big fight to get him into a dress at church. And he'd show up at church sullen and pissed off, you know, because you got this little 5-year-old or 6-year-old or whatever, and he's just mad. You know, we'd had a fight for an hour to get the dress on him. And and his grandma was a great seamstress, and she would, about every 6 months, she'd make a new crushed velvet soft dress. It was black, or one was dark blue, or
plainest
purple.
Plainest I could possibly get.
No bows, no puffy sleeves, no lace, no nothing like that. Because
even putting a beret in my hair was a 30-minute process with mom.
It was.
Hated it.
Oh, it was just like, oh my gosh! And his teachers would be like, "Geez, what is wrong with this kid?" Because he'd show up and he wouldn't say a word to anybody, wouldn't talk to anybody. He was just mad that he had to be in that dress. So that was, you know, if anybody says, oh, you know, kids don't know, or they, and I hear it all the time. How could they know when they're so young, or how could they? And I'm like, you know, you have no idea what you're talking about, because we knew. And we did, you know, I mean, we're good Mormon parents. I think grandmas and mom, everybody tried steering Tyler into more girl appropriate behaviors and clothing choices and everything like that. And he was like, no way, I'm not having anything to do with this.
I think that's a good trail to start going down. Tyler, so you're active in church at the time.
Yes.
Not always the dress wearing.
Right.
Active in church. What was the experience like in activity days, primary,
girls camp,
all those experiences?
Well, to this day, I can still recite the Young Women's Anthem. And, you know, I did that for a couple years of my life until things started really changing and I really started to figure things out and transferred out. I haven't gone really to third hour in general of church sense, because it's not really like, I mean, I think a persistent thing that's been there my entire life is when you're struggling as a kid with deciding which gender and where you fit, because obviously society is very structured based on that. There was a long period of, well, I can't be this, but I hate being this. So where do I fit in between? You know, I remember going through middle school and in church and seeing all the kids slowly start to kind of branch off in their groups of boys and their groups of girls, and maybe even starting to kind of date each other. And I couldn't participate in any of that because I was the weird kid with long hair that was still wearing Minecraft shirts and jeans and like my Skechers, and, you know, and I never really knew where I could fit because the boys thought I was weird and the girls also were like, well, what's wrong with that girl, you know? And it continued to kind of go through church. You know, I never really was the girl that dressed up all cute and pretty like everyone else. And so a lot of the girls just, you know, they were nice, of course, and inclusive as much as they could be. But I was also kind of the pity case, it seemed like. You know, every time I'd show up to Young Women's once in a blue moon, it'd be like, oh, we're so glad you came. And, you know,
project.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not that I blame any of them. They were all kind, for sure, but I think they just didn't really know what to do with it, you know, and neither did I, by all means. But so eventually, as I came out, we started kind of transferring things around that way. I stopped going to Young Women's. I did attend activity days a little bit as a kid, I remember, with my sister here and there, and I never really worked on the personal progress.
About what age did you stop attending?
I was probably 13, maybe 14, around there.
Well,
it took a couple years.
But when Tyler really came out, And we can talk about that a little bit, but here we went and we talked to our bishop about it. And we said, well, you know, what do you want us to do and stuff? And he basically asked us to go home for third hour, you know, because there's not a place for Tyler in young men's or young women's.
Right.
Which was really interesting because the other kids are like, well, geez, if Tyler gets to go home, then we don't want to go. You know, what are you going to do? Leave us here kind of thing. And they all of a sudden we have a mutiny on our hands with the kids. None of the kids wanted to go to third hour if Tyler doesn't have to go to third hour. So it was kind of a big mess, but.
And I still remember, even I think as a little kid too, like I knew that I could sense. I know people thought I was weird, but at the same time, I'm like, well, it's not like I'm trying to be. I want to be normal and stuff, you know, but all of you think I'm weird and I don't even know why. I don't know why I'm feeling this way or why it's uncomfortable for me. I just remember sitting pissed off in my church Sunday school classes. And I think that's part of the reason I grew up so shy too, is just because socially I felt unaccepted in most situations I was in. I felt like apart from everyone. I felt like I couldn't join in and be normal and that they could see me necessarily as just another person with them. And so I remember, you know, I'd never raise my hand in classes. I would never talk. I would never socialize with any of the kids.
What was it that was so uncomfortable? What was it? Was it the clothing? Was it the separation of gender? Young women, young men program, was it, or was it something, what was so uncomfortable?
I think overall, just the umbrella statement I would put on it is being seen as something that was so not me, you know, when just being recognized as a she, being recognized as I'm supposed to wear dresses, I'm supposed to be pretty, all of the expectations that society put on me that I was just so, you know, resistant to. It was just uncomfortable. I didn't really know. I can't explain a pinpoint reason of why. It's something that, you know, again, maybe I, you know, people will say I don't know, but maybe even like psychologically at the top of my brain, no, I didn't know, but deep down just something wasn't right from day one. You know, I didn't know why I felt uncomfortable. I just know that I did. So
I remember when Tyler was 12, we had a spring break, and Tyler and his sister and my youngest sister, who's only 6 years older than my oldest daughter, we all decided we'd go on a photography trip. And we went down and we went and saw Lehman Caves National Park, and in the national park over that's just over the border and into Nevada, and then we went down to we were going to hit the Grand Canyon, but our side was closed still, and we went stayed a night in St. George, and then we went over to Antelope Canyon and, you know, saw who took pictures in the cool rock formations down there, and then we went to Zion's and stuff. And when we were at Zion's, you know, I was worried about the kids getting dehydrated, so I kept pushing them to drink water, you know, and got them bottles. It was hot even in the spring that time, and Tyler wouldn't drink any water. And I was like, well, you know, and then he kind of needed to pee. And I'm like, well, go pee. And he's like, well, they don't have like a family bathroom. That's what he was looking for. And I'm realizing, I'm like, well, what's that? But that was literally it, is that he didn't want to go into the girls' bathroom. And he didn't want to go in the boys' bathroom, and he wanted a family bathroom where it was combined there. And I was like, well, what's that all about? And so I figure out at that point that Tyler hasn't been in the bathroom at school in like 4 or 5 years at all. He would never, ever, ever pee. And, you know, when this is like right after that, Obama was coming in with the transgender bathroom policies and all that. And I'll tell you, that is a real, real serious issue. Tyler would not drink anything from the time he got up until he got home from school at all, because he would not pee at school because the little boys didn't want a girl, because the kids that were in his class and knew that he was female didn't want a girl in the bathroom, and the kids in all the other classes that thought there was a little boy in the bathroom with him because he looked like a little boy would all get mad at him if he went in the girl's bathroom.
On that note, I have specific. I think I was literally almost just traumatized to the point where I had situations where I was rejected. Like, I had very uncomfortable situations. I remember in second grade in Sunrise Elementary, where I went in Smithfield, there was a point where I remember we were reading story time, and I just had to go. So finally, after literally holding that for probably 3 hours, and it was like pain, I raised my hand and I left. And I went in the bathroom, and I remember I was like sitting in the stall, and I heard all of a sudden after recess, they'd always have the bathroom and drink break, you know, or before. And there was just this huge flood of girls that came in all of a sudden into the bathroom. And if I did ever go in the bathroom, you know, it was always just the double crossies, like, please no one be in there, you know. And so I'm sitting there like quarantining myself in the stall waiting for them all to leave. But all these girls, meanwhile, are waiting for the stall to open. And I even had girls to the point where they were like peeking through the cracks in the stall and like trying to see someone in here, you know, like, because I was in there for a solid 30 minutes, it felt like. And it got to the point where this one girl went and got her teacher and brought her back and said that there was a boy sitting in the stall in the girl's bathroom. And she came and talked to me, and I had to explain to her something that I didn't even want to tell her was true, because it wasn't, that I was a girl and that I was supposed to be in that bathroom. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry I look the way I do.
Second grade.
And I literally had a teacher come and discipline me, trying to tell me, well, what on earth are you doing in the bathroom? You know, thinking that some second grader is being a pervert or something, you know? And from that moment on, I was like, never doing that again, you know? And that was a daily thing.
So, yeah, so it was like right after that, it was kind of the end of the school year, but I immediately called the school administration where he was and said, you know, you need to figure out some sort of accommodation here. And so they sort of did, you know, told him you could have access to the faculty bathrooms and stuff like that. And I think that helped. Obviously, it wasn't what it needed to be. But, then when he finally did come out again when he was 12, you know, I reached out, and I already knew parents from, you know, the Mama Dragons group and stuff like that. So I reached out, and you know, we found a lot of the people that, you know, I remember, like, Nika Allgood, it was one of them, and Tyler had seen a video that her son Grayson had done, and I took him to Pride for the first time to walk with Mormons Building Bridges, and when we did that, Tyler Tyler saw Grayson and was starstruck, like, wouldn't even talk to him. It was like, that's crazy.
Well, I remember seeing those videos too, and during this time, like, shortly after, I mean, that's maybe a conversation for later, just kind of the whole process of coming out and everything and what I experienced. But I think a lot of trans people can relate to the, you know, you finally Google the question of what's wrong with me, and the world of the internet just opens up, and you kind of like, transgender, what is that word? What does this mean? What is all of this stuff? And I think that was one of the first times that I was exposed to what hormone therapy could do, and that the fact there was surgeries and other options that could further along how I felt. And at this point, you know, puberty is just kind of starting as far as female goes. And I'm just like learning, I hate what's happening to my body, but I could look like that if I wanted to, you know? And so for me, it was my first kind of exposure, really. I started watching the videos on hormone replacement therapy and how there's surgeries and, like, a bunch of different stuff.
I think what happened is he was 11, and he has an aunt who's a hairstylist up there, and she wasn't in, and mom dropped him off to get a haircut. Yeah. And the stylist probably was thinking, I'm going to do his mom a favor and talk him into, yeah, isn't it time they have a nice short haircut? And he's like, yeah.
Well, a long time.
What happened, though? I had gotten, so before, after years, I remember I finally convinced my mom to let me get like a pixie cut, you know, a shorter female haircut still. And she finally agreed to that. And I still remember that day was like, whoa, freedom, you know, who's amazing. But then after that, I remember, you know, looking up pictures of still like lesbians and stuff that had short hair and like faux hawks, like spiked up still. And that was the closest thing female wise that I could convince mom to get to what I wished my hair was. And I remember going into that salon, and she, I didn't even know what she was planning on doing. I just told her I wanted a faux hawk, and I was thinking like Ruby Rose, just short kind of butch hair, you know. I wasn't thinking by all means that she'd whip out the clippers. And I still remember kind of just being on my phone. I'm probably like 12 years old, and I'm wearing full boys clothes. You know, I looked pretty much like how I wanted at that point, but wasn't fully socially transitioned or anything yet. And she whipped out the clippers, and I told her I wanted a faux hawk. And she just put those to my head, and I looked up in the mirror, and I was like, well, that's too late. You know, I was
awesome. Like, well,
crap,
mom's
yeah.
Gonna be mad.
And I remember still my mom coming back, and she sat down in the waiting room, and she just stared at me that entire haircut like, oh, crap, you know, like, what just happened? And I'm over here thinking, like, like, this is great, you know.
And then he looked up on, you know, at that point, it was right about that point, he looked up on YouTube, you know, girls who want to be boys and stuff, and he found a bunch of, like blogs on YouTube, video blogs with transgender kids talking about being transgender and
their transition, starting
transition
hormone
stuff
therapies.
And everything,
yeah.
Like that. And then he came down, and I remember you should tell him about the letter that you wrote to mom.
Yeah. So I remember about 3 days after getting that haircut. Yeah, this was around October 2014. I remember going down on my mom's laptop at the time, which was like the only computer that we had in our house, while she was gone at work. And I think I was homesick. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, I mean, of course there's butch lesbians and there's girls that have short hair, but I'm like, I think I like a little too much exactly how this makes me look like a boy. You know, I was like, I don't think that normal little girls like having a buzz cut, you know? And as a 12-year-old, that was logical for me. So I remember going down, and I loved that haircut, and it was like freedom for me. And so I was going down to write a letter to my mom about how she should let me get that haircut for the rest of, you know, for as long as I could go. And I ended up kind of sitting down, and I was like having that thought process of, why do I actually like this haircut so much? And eventually I was just like put into words. And I remember a couple times in my life, my mom actually would just randomly bring up, you know, she's like, well, Lexi, do you ever feel like you want to be a boy? And I was like, no, that's weird. You know, that's crazy. What, how he's in, you know, why would you say that kind of thing? But then I actually thought about it, and I'm like, wait, but would I, you know? And so I ended up going on Google, and I typed up, you know, I'm like, girl who wants to be a boy. I feel like a boy, but I'm a girl, you know, all these kinds of things. And I saw the word transgender. I found like the wiki page for LGBT community and what all of that meant. And even at this point, I still barely even knew what I was looking at. What I was thinking at the time was, I have like a clinical name that can let me tell mom that she should let me be a boy, right? Like something that is just as handicapped, legitimate, that I could tell her is, look, I'm supposed to be a boy. This will make me like healthier, happier. You know, I didn't even know what I was doing, honestly. I was still just so excited that I read a couple pages of the internet, and I was like, I know what I need to. And I went back down to that computer, and I wrote a 3-page long letter as a 12-year-old to my mom, talking about how I never quite felt right, how I'm sure that everything's going to be okay, but that I figured out what all these words meant. I've learned about all this new stuff, and that I wanted to tell her about it. And it was a positive letter of, I had no idea that this is something my mom could disown me for at the time. I was still barely even understanding what it was myself, you know. All I knew was that, hey, maybe I could be comfortable now, you know. And so I write this 3-page letter, and I remember I folded it up in a little envelope, made it all nice. It even touched, I think there was maybe one sentence in there of how growing up, I do remember having crushes on girls. I never was interested in the boys. And I folded it up, put it in that little letter, and I left it on her bed and waited for her to get home from work. And I still remember sitting in my room for probably 2 of the longest hours of my life, and even not knowing at the time that that was scary, something inside me was telling me, that's scary. And I was laying on my bed, and I remember listening to all of the calmest music I could think of. I was trying to calm myself down because my heart rate was just going for 2 hours straight. And I remember I eventually, like, as I kind of heard my mom, the garage open, and she was coming home, I pretended I was asleep. And I kind of heard her walk down the hall because her room was really close to mine at the time when I lived upstairs. And I could tell, you know, I gave her some time to go in her room, see the letter, read it. And eventually I couldn't stand it anymore, so I just came out of my room probably like an hour after she came home. And I went to just go get a drink of water, right? And I was passing her bedroom door, and I heard her call me in. She's like, "Will you come in here for a minute?" And I was just like, you know, stomach drops. And I went in there, and I sat on her bed. And the first thing I remember she told me, just being a completely uneducated Mormon mother, she was like, "I can't believe I have a gay kid." She said, "I can't wrap my head around having a gay kid." And I'm over here thinking, like, did you read the letter? Like, that there was maybe one sentence in there that even touched on sexual orientation, you know, at all. But I think she just didn't even know. And I remember I put a sticky note on the back of that letter that said, "Look up on Wiki LGBT community and transgender," for her to, like, kind of understand it better from what I couldn't tell her. And from that point, that was a painful conversation. It was her. She instantly, you know, we talked for 30 more minutes. She told me this was a phase and that I'd grow out of it and that I was just confused. And she took me to my room, and I remember opened the closet and started pulling out all of the deeply tucked away girls' clothes that I never touched, and started trying to, like, force even more that femininity on me that I hated so much and that I had resisted so persistently majority of my life. Just thinking, you know, like, nope, we've got to fix this. This cannot happen, you know. And 100% turnaround now, of course. It took a while, but my mom is not the same woman she was, you know. And I think that's something I'm hoping to help kids with, too, is that they don't have to go through that phase, that conversation with their mom or dad, that, well, they can just know and help them.
The other thing she said is, don't tell anybody about this.
She did.
And so he didn't tell anybody about it. Yeah. And his grades started suffering, and his relationship with his mom started getting really rocky. And by February, he came down and he's like, "Dad, while I'm down here this weekend, I want to get a short haircut." And I'm like, "Okay, that's fine." And so we go get a short haircut, and he says, "Well, you know, then on the way home," and I think probably due to the reaction that he got it from his mom, he sends me a text and he's like, "Dad, can I text you about something? Because it's hard for me." And I'm like, "Sure." And he's like, "Do you know what transgender is?" I'm like, "Yes." He's like, "You do?" I'm like, "Yes." He's like, "Well, I think that might be me." And I said, "Yeah, I kind of figured."
My first and ever reaction I had only had at that time was horrible. And I was thinking, you know, I'm like, in myself, I was thinking, I don't want to tell anyone about this ever again, you know, because I was instantly thinking that everyone would react the same way. And so when I talked to my dad, it was like, "Wait, what? Like, you're okay with this?" You know? And I still remember you asked me, you know, like, "What are you going to do with puberty? Like, what happens?" And I was like, "Well," and I just started talking about all the YouTube videos I had watched. And I still remember to this day, one of my favorites was Benton Sorensen, who's a Canadian that lives in Vancouver. And I remember he just was everything that I looked at, and I was like, "I want to be you. This is, like, my goal," you know? And so I sent you, I think, like, videos of him, and mm-hmm. I was like, "See, there's this thing called hormone replacement therapy. You can use testosterone, and it can, you know, there's hormone blockers for female puberty." We talked about kind of surgeries, how that can work, and I just kind of started talking to him about, you know, all of this research that I had held in, because for that 3 suffocating months of not telling anybody, my only outlet was, like, watching YouTube videos, reading internet things, you know, Instagram followers on other trans guys that were all just, like, everything I wanted to be. And it got to the point where I was like, when I'm 18, I'll just run away and do it, you know, by myself, because I knew somewhere inside me that was what I needed to be happy. That was going to be, you know, that would fix everything. It got to the point.
He picked a new name. Yeah. I was so flattered. He's going to be Tyler John Armstrong. My first name is John.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, I chose my name. My dad's name is John. That's a family name. That's cool." Yeah. And then he switched it to Tyler Joseph because apparently 21 Pilots is cooler than dad.
Wasn't the only reason. But
well, Tyler Glenn too, you know. Yeah. So he had all these Tylers that he thought were super cool.
Where that name actually came from, I still remember thinking when it came to the time, I was like, starting to think about, well, what do I want my name to be? I would just remember back in like third grade or second grade, just I remember having thoughts as a little kid being, you know, I'd hear names of the other boys in my classrooms and be like, I like that name. I wish my name was that kind of thing. And so I just thought of like old names that I remember liking as a kid. And Tyler was one of them, along with like Cody. And I even remember for a long time as a little kid, that's kind of a thing that I've talked to other trans people. And a lot of the time what they'll do is another sign is like on video games when they're making avatars or something, they'll always do the gender that they wish they were, their choice, or they'll, you know, name them boys' names or, you know, something like that. And so I remember all growing up on my Xbox, on my Wii's, I would make an account under Rocky. And that was my favorite name because that was the name of the Red Power Ranger that I had always grown up watching. So, you know, I would name them all Rocky or Will or Tyler or something else. It was never Lexi, you know. That was just my name because it had to be. Then eventually, you know, just progress from there.
Yeah, so there's a lot of territory. There's so many avenues we can go here because it's all fascinating stuff. Mm. The one thing I want to jump back to just briefly, because I think for a lot of our audience, you brought this up when you were talking with your mom on the bed, where she read your letter and immediately said, oh, I've got a gay son or gay daughter.
Yeah.
At this point, what is the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity?
Well, that's a good question. I think a lot of the time, like very uneducated people or maybe people that just don't even know what they're doing, you know, they think that trans is just like the super gay, almost like the drag queens or something like that, when that's entirely a separate thing. If anything, trans people are probably the last thing they want to do is dress up again as the gender that they were, you know, that I would never put makeup on, you know. So I think a lot of people have this conception that it's like super gay or that you're so gay that your gender wants to change, you know, or something like that. But regardless, gender and sexual orientation, of course, are entirely different things. Some people will try and argue that I'm gay because I was female and that I like girls. But it's entirely, you know, it's just two separate things. So I'm a male that likes females. I was a female, but that's entirely, I'm not lesbian by all means. So I think sexual orientation, you know, that's who you love, that's who you're attracted to, who you have sexual feelings towards, whatever it may be, whereas gender is just the identity physically and socially that you put on yourself, that you want on yourself for your comfort in society and how it's structured, you know.
So a good way of understanding it, heterosexuality is opposite sex attraction.
Right.
Homosexuality, same-sex attraction.
Mm-hmm.
That's its own category.
Right.
When we talk about gender identity, that is the gender by which you identify as.
Of course.
And so when we start talking about the topics of sexual identity and gender identity, when you identify as a male, and even though you transitioned from a female,
right,
you need to identify as a male and then eventually espouse a female, mm-hmm, there's no homosexuality issue at that point,
yeah,
because you are not attracted to an opposite sex.
Yeah.
And that's probably the better way of confusing,
right,
territory.
Yeah.
But logically walking through that, you can now begin to understand that.
I think just the simplest way to put it is whatever gender they identify as now, apply that to what sexuality is, you know, like just
apply that to
I'm
the
male,
heterosexual,
so I like
homosexual
girls,
sexuality.
Just because I was a female at some point in the past does not mean I'm lesbian, right? So a lot of people just apply what they are now to what they like now, you know.
When Tyler first was coming out and stuff, I, you know, so weird conversations to have with your 12-year-old as a dad, you know, they're all talking about sex is always awkward when you're talking with your children, right?
But not to mention when it's nothing in the textbook.
So I'm like, well, I had to ask him, do you like boys or girls? And he's like, I don't know. At this point, it's like, I know I want to be a boy. I know I'm a boy. And I'm like, well, obviously it's been that way for a long time. But I'm like, well, do you like boys or girls? And he's like, I don't know yet. You know, and he kind of had to go through that. I mean, I ask people all the time who are heterosexual. I'm like, well, when did you decide to be heterosexual? You know, it's like, when do you decide this? You don't. it's just kind of, you just are. And with Tyler, you know, he knew he was a boy. And I think that was one of those things that he wasn't ready to sit there and say, when you go through a time when you're like, you know, I realize I'm attracted to men, or I go through a time and I'm like, I have crushes on girls kind of thing. Well, Tyler was sitting there going, well, you know, I'm not quite to that point in my life where I'm like having for sure crushes. And I know my orientation. He knew his gender identity, but he wasn't sure what his orientation was at that point yet. And it took probably another year or so to figure out, yeah, I like girls.
Yeah.
And I remember he had crushes on a movie star girl. What was her name?
Stephanie Scott.
Yeah. We would go
Jennifer Lawrence, Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, we'd go see these movies because of the girl that was in them. Not any reason.
Perfectly normal teenager, you know. Yeah.
But that's tough because, the church, you know, just looks at, and I mean, it's so weird because I got pretty deep into the community and looking there's a transgender group that's for LDS people and stuff. And I've got a ton of trans and gay friends, lots and lots, lots and lots and lots at this point. But I met one kid who went on an LDS mission and he served a mission and got the priesthood and everything. But when he was a child, he was born intersex and his parents cut his penis off. And they just thought that surgery would be easier and would have some gender confirmation surgery at that point and raise him as a girl because he had a vagina. And he got to be about 12 or 13 and he's like, I'm not a girl. And just like Tyler did, I mean, learning about intersex for me as an LDS dad was something that was like, aha, you know, okay, I get it now. And so this kid, and I communicated with him a little bit. He was at BYU and he's engaged and he switched being raised as a girl to being a boy. And the church accepted that because he was born with both, kind of let you go ahead and figure out which you are at that point.
So
so he went on a mission and got the priesthood and went all the way up through, and he came home and he met a girl and they got married the first summer that the new Provo City Center temple was open. They got married in that temple. So the church married two humans with vaginas in the temple.
Well,
right,
he was a male, but just because he was intersex, it's all of a sudden.
Right, and then I know of another person, and I'm not going to say where he lives or anything like that. But this other person, it's needless to say, he lives in our county, and he felt some same sex attraction in high school, and then he went on a mission, and he got the priesthood, and he met his wife at BYU, and they got married, and they tried to have a baby. And they could not get pregnant and they couldn't figure out why. And eventually they adopted and then they got a better job that the better job allowed for them to have, insurance that covered fertility treatment. So he goes and he figures out that, you know, they look at his sperm motility and they're like, well, there's no sperm at all. And so then they start doing more stuff and they're like, and so they do a genetic test and he is XX. He's biologically, dang it, he is female, period. That's it. He's female.
But he's not. So it's like.
But he has a penis, and he's married to a woman, and he served a mission, and he holds a priesthood. And so you've got people, it's like, well, does your genitals determine your gender, or does your chromosomes, do they determine your gender? Because both of these guys have been married in the temple. That's the thing where it came out and it's like, you know what? If you could be born with the wrong chromosomes or the wrong genitals or whatever, how much easier is it for a child in vitro in the first 3 months where you start separating your body starts developing into the male or female, that you have a some sort of a chemical imbalance. And we're starting, and I've got 15 studies that I had found that show a biological reason for transgenderism. And I know that we keep finding more and more and more as more study is done on this to figure out that, yeah, that, you know, there is a cause for this. And you know, I get people that are like, well, you know, it's abnormal. And I'm like, well, that's fine. Call it abnormal. There are a lot of different human conditions that are abnormal, right?
They're still accommodated.
And it's like, well, you know, I mean, if you've got a kid that has spina bifida, or you've got a kid that's Downs, or you've got a kid that has Klinefelter's or Turner syndrome, which are both chromosomal syndromes, right? Where they have extra Y's or extra X's or whatever, XXYY or XXX or any of these things. I'm like, do we as a society treat them poorly or different because they're retarded? You know, they have a whatever thing that is making them not typical or normal. Do we treat them any different? And no, when my mom was a little girl, you know, if somebody had a Down syndrome kid, they would keep them in the back of the house. They never went to church. They never left the house. It was embarrassing to have a handicapped kid like that. And we're finally getting through, you know, people are like, oh, there's more transgender people now than before. And I'm like, I don't think so. But I think that transgender people who even transgender, you know, they would go as far as to come out as a butch lesbian, and that was far enough, or they would bury it. And I know a ton of adults who have been, you know, they've just, you know, they either come out as adults or they just still are in the closet. They're transgender, but they're like, societally, I'm going to be treated so crappy by everybody that I'm not going to come out. But they're transgender. And I think that we're getting to the point where it's better accepted and better understood. Tyler can go find somebody on YouTube that's transgender and go, oh yeah, that I recognize that. That is me.
There's my herd.
I get it.
Here are my people.
And so, you know, I think the internet, for one, has brought it closer together to where if you've got a million transgender people, I always tell people, by the way, you've peed in a bathroom with a transgender person and it hasn't been weird because you didn't have any idea you were there with them. Because you don't. Transgender people are not drag queens. They don't dress up. They're not trying to get attention. They're trying to blend in.
Trying to be comfortable.
There's a million, couple million transgender people in the United States and nobody knows anybody that's trans. So many people don't, but they've met them, they've associated with them, and they just have no clue. They have no clue because they pass long.
Interesting, you know, everyone seems to have this conception that the trans person is the one making everyone else uncomfortable, when it's like, not that it's an us against them, you know, we're all just people, but like, it's more like when I walk into a bathroom as a second grader, do you think I was making them more uncomfortable or me, you know?
Well, I get internet fights all the time, and I said, yeah, I've got these pictures of these beautiful transgender girls or these super stacked, muscly transgender guys. And I'm like, how do you like this gal to sidle up next in the next urinal to you at the, in the bathroom? And they're like, what? You know, would you feel comfortable? And, no, no way. You're a kid. I'm not going to pee next to a beautiful girl. I'm like, well, she was assigned male at birth. And now you're uncomfortable. I'm like, come on. You know, people are so clueless about the whole thing. But that whole thing with intersex really put me in a position where I'm like, aha, you know, okay, I get this. I can wrap my head around it in a different way. And
just maybe intersex in the brain.
That's exactly. I think being transgender is just really, it's another form of intersex that doesn't manifest.
Chromosomes or genitals.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah.
And there's tons of studies and more coming out that show, you know, scans of people's brains, of trans people, that their brain more closely resembles, maybe not 100%, but the structure of the gender that, not that they were the sex they were assigned at birth, but the gender that they transitioned to be. Yeah. So, AKA, my brain is probably more male structured than female.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Tyler has the mannerisms and the you know, I worry about him doing the same thing as my teenage boys do. You know, I do not see Tyler in any way, shape, or form as my daughter. I can't even wrap my head around that anymore.
Yeah.
So
Earlier in the podcast, you mentioned that you are trying to create safe places and better education, better understanding, and more education for kids who are going through this. What are you doing? And just to go along with what your dad's talking about, how do we inform and help the community understand this topic better?
Well, I think one of the things is that I understand, you know, as I've been told by many people, I'm a pioneer in this generation for a whole different movement. And I think that, you know, my ultimate goal is just to get people educated to the point where they don't have to have that conversation I had with my mom, or they don't have to go into their bishop and talk to him about the things that I have, you know. And I understand my bishops have both been very accommodating, and one very much less educated than the other, I think. But I still remember probably my last bishop's appointment, understandably, it was probably like 8 months ago. And I went in there, and we've talked about, you know, he's talked to my mom about my surgery upcoming and all those things, and he's fine with those things. And he's accommodated me when I wanted to start coming to church in a tie, and I've done that for years now. But going in to that office one time, and he didn't mean anything by it, and I understand that sometimes I have to go through uncomfortable situations to maybe prevent future kids from having to, including things like going in and having an interview with my bishop and him asking me how my dating life is and how I maybe have sex and how that works, or if I'm lesbian or if I consider myself straight, all of the above things, which he did indeed ask me at some point. And as uncomfortable as that was, and almost, you know, looking there being like, that's a little far stepping for a bishop, you know, but maybe that can prevent some future kid from going in and having the same questions asked, you know. And
yeah, some of that is just an educational process. I mean, I recently got a letter from a friend of mine who's one of the Mama Dragons who she gave me this letter that was delivered by a stake president down in Ephraim area, you know, around Snow College, and this stake president writes this letter that is just brutal, that says basically if you go through with gender confirmation surgery, you're going to be excommunicated, period, that this is disgusting, it's an abomination, all the stuff. I mean, the guy must have just got finished reading A Miracle of Forgiveness or something, or a Mormon Doctrine, because
or Handbook One.
He's brutal with this kid. And then I know of others I've got another friend in the transgender group that's the LDS transgender group that's like, yeah, I'm in the primary presidency, and my primary president and my bishop are supporting me with the rest of the ward council and everything. And they're like, look, can we do anything for you? You've got your top surgery coming up, your gender confirmation surgery coming up. Can we bring you food? And that's the difference, is you get one kid that ends up, and the manual, the church's manual, says that there may be a need for church discipline, maybe. And it's totally up to, which is, I mean, it's nice in a way, but it's like, it's nice to know that there is not going to be, but it's so dang vague that it's dangerous for kids or adults that are going through it, where you just like, you know, you got one that's basically telling you everything that, you know, you need to feel in order to go, you know, I don't know if I should be here or not. And then you got somebody else that's like, how can we support you? How can we help you out? And you've got everything in between. And that's really tough to take. But as far as safe spaces go, we're a small group, but they're, you know, I mean, Mama Dragons is 5,000 moms. We've got our Dragon Dads group, and there's about 200 of us. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because it's become to where it's not just an LDS thing. We've got a lot of dads, and most of them are from conservative religious traditions that are in conflict with having LGBT kids. And that's a support group for the dads. But even within that group, you know, most of these dads are not parents of transgender kids, they're parents of gay kids. And this year in Pride, we're going to wear we're getting our Dragon Dads t-shirts printed up. And for the Utah Pride, we're going to wear a shirt that actually just says support, you know, trans teens kind of thing. And so these guys, even though they have transgender, not transgender kids, they have gay kids, the dads have decided all together, this is where the, you know, the fight is today, is with trans rights, not so much just gay kids. The kids that are really suffering out there are the trans kids.
Of course, that fight's still going, but there's new ones are coming up that are becoming more prevalent. You know, just even 5 years ago when Caitlyn Jenner and everything was happening, and all of that has advanced so far since then. The conversations have increased. You know, people are talking about it. There's attention coming to it again. Some people now who knew what gay was for years, but maybe have never heard of the idea of trans, it's now known, you know, and I'm hoping that we can further that and also do it in a way that's loving and accepting and inclusive for everybody and progressive, not detrimental.
So let's talk about transition surgery.
So excited. It's a whole different, I mean, even just, we went to Hawaii in like 2015, and you can ask my dad, I cried multiple times during that trip, and I just couldn't, you know, enjoy it like someone else. Every time we'd go to the beach, all my stepbrothers would be like throwing off their shirts, run into the water, and I'm over here like, I can't even get wet or else things will show that I don't want to, you know, or I can't go and do that. And for many years, I've had to tell all my friends and stuff like that, that I just hate water. It's not that I hate water. It's I hate what attire and stuff comes with it and how my body fits into that. So this surgery is not just, you know, a lot of people argue that it's an optional surgery. It's just a choice kind of thing. But if anything, it's just fixing what needs to be fixed so that I can breathe, you know? I can already just imagine will be life-changing, you know, even just things like wearing tank tops will be easier now. There will be no binding, not that I've done that for years actually at this point, but testosterone kind of helps with that. But I think just after this surgery, you know, there's no more awkward situations of explaining to my other guy friends that don't know why I won't throw off my shirt and get in the hot tub with them, or, you know, going out and even just like with girls on dates and stuff like that. It's just embarrassing. It's uncomfortable. It's confusing. It causes questions to come up. But this whole thing, it's just a whole different world, I think. It's just a limit taken off.
As parents, if you know you have a trans kid and you can put them on blockers for a few years and then you make sure that you're real comfortable with this and everything, and then you start the hormone therapy and things like that, if you look at these kids that have started young enough, and people are like, well, why don't you just wait till they're adults and let them make this decision? And I'm like, you know, I have lots of trans women who are friends that did not come out because of social issues or reasons or whatever until they're older. And, you know, I love these women, but they don't pass very well. And it's really hard on them. Because they don't. Their dysphoria is really just takes a toll.
50 years of testosterone tends to make it hard to look like you've had estrogen. You know.
Yeah, you got man hands, and you've got hair where you don't want it, and you've got your face is shaped a little differently, and everything like that. Tyler looks like looks like his brothers at this point, and his quality of life as a transgender man is going to be very different because we supported him the way he needed to be supported from a pretty young age. And I mean, it was, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, well, what parent is prepared for all kinds of things that happen with their kids? We've never been through this before. We don't know what we're doing, you know? But thank goodness we were, inspired to get the help that we needed from the right places and I think make the right decision for Tyler long term. And it was a long term decision. It took us a while to figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. We look back now and say, well, putting him on hormones and blockers and stuff, that was a hard thing to go through with his mom and with me. And she was like, no, we're not doing that. And there might be there might be side effects of blockers that we're not talking about, and that could be really bad. And
And we had to go and do a ton of research together with that while we're fighting still as divorcing spouses. And not going on, and sitting there saying, okay, we got to figure out how to be able to even communicate for Tyler's sake in this situation. That was brutally hard, and it's not an easy decision, and it's not something that somebody just goes, oh yeah, this is the way we're doing it. And we're, you know, parents who love their kids that go through this, they don't make snap decisions over this stuff. It's like, okay, what am I doing? How can I best support my kid? One thing is Mary Ellen, who used to be the director of the Pride Center and stuff for just a very short period of time. You know, when all this was first coming out, she brought us a bunch of stuff. And one of the things that she brought us was the study that was done by the Family Acceptance Project. And we read that, and the statistics are just one of those things that they don't lie. And the statistics are that it's about 15 times as likely that a transgender kid will end up dying by suicide than a cisgender regular kid. Mm-hmm. And you look at that and you go, I mean, I've had people that are like, well, yeah, that's proof that being transgender is bad. And I'm like, well, it's fine, but it's not like you change this, you know, oh, what are we going to do? Like, wave our magic wand and now the kid's not transgender anymore? I mean, this is not a decision. And that's easy for me because Tyler came out so young. You know, mm-hmm. I knew that he wasn't making a decision for some weird reason, but that 15 times more likely. And we went through some rough patches a little bit,
for sure,
even so with Tyler, but at this point I don't worry about that at all with him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's okay. His life's pretty good, and he's got good friends and stuff like that. But the one mitigating factor is that if these kids have supportive parents and friends and family, then it'll drop them down to where they're right in line with everybody else. And you go, well, okay, what does that mean? And what that means is that the issue is not being transgender, it's being accepted.
The issue is the community. I found this very true, especially in the LGB community. When you lose community, we start losing LGB members and the LGBNT. When you lose your sense of friendship and connection and the ability to relate to other people, then we start seeing a high rate of suicide. I think it's very clear.
We're a social race. We need that acceptance. We need to fit in somewhere. And, you know, some people may bag on that, say it's a bad thing, but that's just human nature.
No, we need a connection.
People just need to fit.
What is your advice to teenagers your age that are looking for the connection? Where do you find it?
I would think the internet is a great place to start. A lot of people won't maybe be like, whoa, about that. You know, some people don't like the internet or something. But I think that's really the difference. Putting yourself out there, that's important. You know, if you're not okay with that, it's fine. But it's a rough patch, and it's normal to fall in the holes, you know. But I think it really does. It makes all the difference if you just have people doing it with you.
What about online support groups?
I do have some experience with some of those, and in my personal experience, I don't know how much they were for sure helpful at some point. I think now I'm just so far along and so comfortable with everything that I'm not really in that point where I need it anymore. And I more so go into them now, and it's just full of a bunch of random people that I don't even know anymore, or, you know, but during the period of time, I don't think I ever really finished talking about that. I forgot about it. But there was a point between when I started to kind of socially transition that I actually skipped like a year of school. I did online school instead during the point. So I went from my middle school, Cedar Ridge, and at that point I was still pretty much female, but then it was like right at the end of seventh grade that I started figuring everything out. So during eighth grade, to kind of have a break while I figured everything out, I did online school to get away from all the kids as I'm like changing, so that no one's like, what's going on? You know, like, what is happening with that kid, you know? And then it was kind of a pause in between. This is just in the time in Logan when they were starting to transfer high schools to be ninth grade too. It used to just start at 10th grade. And so it was just kind of that like filler year that I was like, I don't want to go to North Cache, the middle school that I would have gone to. But then I wasn't old enough to go to high school yet or to go to like a new high school where I wouldn't know any kids. So I did, during that time, online school for eighth grade. And then during ninth grade, I went to my new school that I just transferred out of like the beginning of this year, but it was called Fast Forward and it was a charter school, and that school gave me a lot of things in my life. It was for sure, you know, a lifesaver in the sense I went there just, that was the first school I went to was just Tyler, and everything was new and interesting, and it was working all of that out nobody knew, you know.
Some of the administrators and some of the teachers knew, but there were... I mean, at that school, there's probably, what, 4 or 5 trans kids and a whole bunch of gay kids.
And even then.
Yeah, Tyler would tell me about going to seminary, and the seminary teacher, he's like, seminary teacher has no idea that he has, like, 4 LGBT kids in his class.
That I know of, and he's talking about, like, you know, like, anti-gay stuff.
The
sometimes.
November policy and all the...
Yeah, and so we're all just sitting there like, you know, like, hey. And I've even been in funny situations where I remember I was sitting in English last year, or during my 10th grade year at Fast Forward, and there was this one kid that is particularly kind of known to me as just, he's not very bright. He's kind of a dumb kid. But he was sitting in there, and we somehow got on the topic of that people can always tell when someone's gay just by how they talk or how they act, or which is totally untrue, you know. But and then he even went as far as to say, he's like, I'm pretty confident that I can tell when someone's transgender too. And meanwhile, I'm sitting one desk away from him, and I'm like, Kenya, you know, like, that's interesting. So there's just like funny situations like that where people almost think to the point that they know so much what they're talking about. They're so confident in it. And I'm just sitting there like, that's... Yeah. I bet. Yeah, I bet you can tell. You know,
this year in seminary, they're talking about the November policy and stuff like that. Yeah. Tyler calls me and says, Dad, can you check me out? Because they're talking about it again today. And I'm like, yeah, I'll get you out of there. But, Tyler called me and he stood up and he, you know, it's
I have a recording of it still, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm like, well, don't out yourself, you know, because he's not out at seminary. It's his seminary teacher doesn't know that he's trans. And so they're having this thing and they're talking about gay marriage in there. Mm. And Tyler's like, wait a second. and speaking out. And Tyler's funny because Tyler's speaking out for his gay friends. I'm like, dude, the church sees you as gay too. You know, you got to, but that's not the way Tyler sees himself. And he's like speaking out for his gay friends. He's like, what did you say? What was that?
Well, I'll try and think, but bless his heart. I love Brother Dunn. I love my seminary teacher, but I went into class one day and we got on the section of, you know, like marriage and eternal families and all of that sort of thing. And I already just walked into that class and I was like, oh no, you know, I was like, I know what's coming here. They always bring it up, you know, and that's another thing that's kind of a struggle nowadays. I have some friends that have had some real terrible experiences with seminary teachers and classes and them just overstepping what they should. And I think, you know, in the classroom, that's not what they're there for, to talk about political gay rights, and, you know. But he pulled up a chart that was talking about like how it was like a statistics chart of how gay marriage has been accepted over the years and how much it's increased to like 60%. In the sense that he was talking about it, he was talking about like how the world is straying farther from God's light, where I'm over here like, that's awesome. You know, I'm like, sweet. That's a great number. What are you talking about? Like, why are you trying to put in all these kids' heads that that's a terrible thing? You know, if anything, I'm like, that is so great, you know? And he's trying to make it out to be like, look how far we're all like falling away. And, you know, and so I got to the point, I can't remember what I said exactly. It was something about how he was talking about how gays can't get married in the temple and stuff like that, and how straight people... He was talking about how, like, straight people can't, you know, how love and, like, attraction is a feeling that you can't just, like, get over. And I was like, well, exactly. Why do we expect gay people to, then, if heterosexual people can't? I can't remember exactly what I said or what context it was in, but it was just, it got to the point, you know, my voice was shaking and instantly, even speaking at the end of that class, I could instantly tell that brother, my teacher was, he had the kind of like, pale face, even blanched, you know, and then all of the kids just like instantly heads turned, eyes bullets. They're like, oh, someone dare speak up for the sake of the gays, you know? And I was just like, what? You know, I'm like, what? And after that, you know, and interestingly enough, I know there's another trans kid in that class. I know there's for sure another gay kid in that class. And I wanted to go over and be like, you want to go get lunch? You know, like, let's leave, because he's probably making you feel terrible right now, you know? And I was just like, kept glancing over at him, like trying to read, like, are you okay? Because this is probably terrible for you, you know? And I wanted someone to say something, but everyone just sat silent. And that's what I can't stand, you know? Like, by all means, people can keep their peace, but someone's got to say something in situations like that.
How do we change that? How do we, what message do you have for members of the church?
I think don't be afraid of the eyes to stab you through the chest, you know? Like, people will look at you, people will listen to you, but in a sense, that's exactly what we need, you know? And I think that hopefully even just saying like that one thing, even just challenging my teacher that one time, maybe made kids not fall into his words, you know, maybe made them be like, oh, look, there's someone else that is upset about this too, or that they didn't dare say anything, you know. So just even just that one person to stand up and be a leader can make a whole crowd follow. And I think that that's having the courage to do that.
I think it's so tough when you have these cultural things that are going on and things that are being said in seminary classes and stuff like that. And then you get, this was from an address that the Elder Ballard gave at about, let's say it wasn't this past December, it was a December before at BYU. And he said this is from an apostle, but there's so much conflict between things that are said and the way people act, and even sometimes things that are said and things that are said, that it's like, I don't know how to get past this. But Elder Ballard said this. He says, I want anyone who's a member of the church who is gay or lesbian to know that I believe that you have a place in the kingdom, and I recognize that sometimes it may be difficult for you to see where you fit in the Lord's church, but you do. We need to listen and understand what our LGBT brothers and sisters are feeling and experiencing. Certainly, we must do better than we have done in the past so that all members feel that they have a spiritual home where their brothers and sisters love them and where they have a place to worship and serve the Lord. And it's like, you know, you think about that, and then people are like, yeah, but if you're gay and you're having sex, then you know, you're not following the law of chastity. And I'm like, yeah, but whose business is it whether anybody's having sex or not? Mm. You know, I mean, we have people, I know that I was single in the LDS mid-singles in Salt Lake Valley and the Utah County and stuff, and I'm going to church with all these people that are single, and they're supposedly celibate. I know that 50% of them are not, and they're there at church, at least in these LDS singles.
No bishops are asking them about
it. It's not like everybody sits there and says, are you having sex? Or are you, I mean, do we walk around asking everybody, are you having sex? But I mean, it's nobody's damn business. If people have the guts to go to church and be there, then if they want to talk to their bishop about, I'm having sex, or and maybe I shouldn't be, or I should be, whether you're heterosexual or straight or gay or trans or anything like that, it's nobody's business but the person that it's their thing.
I love that quote, that if everyone's sins smelled like cigarette smoke, no one can stand to go to church, yet we all go to church and we're all like self-righteous.
Yeah, that one.
Well, I'm better than, you know, but all of us would reek, you know?
Yeah. It's a very good point, because I've had this, as I've spoken at different conferences, met with bishops and stake presidents about this topic, about the topics of homosexuality and gender identity. I always bring up that very point that you brought up, Drew. What if we remove the element of sex out of this equation? If we got rid of what was spoken of in the bedroom, or hypothetically perceived that's happening in the bedroom, what comes of this topic? Then what as a church member do you do? Because especially when it comes to trans topics, that's not a topic that really centers around what happens in a bedroom. No. We're talking about gender identity. So easily, Tyler's story is lumped into the, well, who's he having sex with? Mm. idea of what members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints wants to bring up or want to bring up. So when we remove that element of sex and what's happening in the dark of night, then it forces us to actually take a look at this topic and look at this as through the lens of real people.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I want people, especially through venues like this podcast. And I think that's probably where we get into the YouTube videos and the shared experiences and the affirmation and the Dragon Dads and the Mama Dragons and all these groups, PFLAG, that are established to help tell stories of real life examples of what it's like to venture down this path. And for me, that's really why I was so interested in this interview. This is a topic that's tough. And there's a million questions.
For sure.
As we sit and discuss this, I think, oh, I want to ask about this. And so we'll probably have to do a follow-up. Because
yeah. It might be good, too, to if there are any questions that I know people often have, you know, that I'm here to answer kind of thing. You know, like if anyone's curious about anything, I can do that. But I do remember now when I was talking about the seminary, is he was basically talking about, well, you know, Mormons aren't technically supposed to have sex until marriage, right? And that's when it's ordained of God. But he was talking about how, well, I'm over here sitting like, well, all of us have a sex drive. We all have completely natural urges of the flesh, as they would call it. So what makes it fair that all of a sudden that straight people have like the opportunity for it to be ordained of God and act on those people, but then we just expect gay people to just go their whole life and like ignore that, and that's not fair for them, you know, like because they can't get married in the temple. So if they don't even have that opportunity for it to be okay all of a sudden, then why do we expect them to be happy, like satisfied with that? I thought it was ridiculous, and I think that's part of the reason that it was like eyes daggers too, because that's sex in like a seminary classroom. It's like, you know, everyone's like holding their breath. They're like, whoa, especially when it comes to gay, everyone's like, oh man, you know. But I was just like, hey, all of us here have those feelings and that is normal. So why all of a sudden when you have a different attraction to a different gender that it's not okay, and that all of a sudden, you know, certain people can do it under God, but then other people, it's just like, no, well, you have to die that way.
I think the difference is, you know, back when those doctrines were formed, the church's position was that, you know, being gay or being LGBT was a decision, it was a choice that you made. It's one of those things that it's like, how can you sit there and call something a sin and call somebody bad and evil and what they're doing wrong when we know that this, and we acknowledge that this is not a choice. It's not a choice. And if it's not a choice, then how is it a sin? Because you're not deciding to be sinful or not, because you didn't decide this to begin with at all.
Right.
It just doesn't, it doesn't make sense. And it's driving us crazy in our families.
Well, and it's a space that the church has found itself in. We had the Kimball era. We had the Boyd K. Packer era. We had these Marky Petersons, the difficult parts of Mormonism that taught that all these things were evil and bad and a choice, and these were all decisions that gay people made. Now, you brought in the Mormon and Gay website. The Mormon and Gay website openly acknowledges that some of this likely was not a choice. They still haven't overly and outwardly conceded that gay people are born this way or trans people are born this way, but what they have conceded is that that we often don't have a decision in, and this is our reality. To think otherwise would back the church into a corner and say, well, if to believe that we're born this way would also, and that this is bad, would do require each of us to acknowledge that God made a mistake in our creation. And Mormonism isn't at that space to say that God made a mistake in creating Tyler or me or a listener of this podcast or anyone who's impacted by the topic of homosexuality or gender identity.
But here's the thing. You know, you look at a miracle of forgiveness and Mormon doctrine, and you can still, and it bothers me that you can still buy them on the as a digital copy, but they're out of print. They're not referenced in any teaching manuals. They don't talk about them the way they did when I was a kid. They're in a whole bunch of people's bookshelves, and they shouldn't be, because then the stake president goes and reads that and writes this thing that says if you get top surgery, you're going to get excommunicated, probably because he just got done reading that book. And he's looking for guidance in that matter. But we all believe that you are, I mean, who believes that the way that you become LGBT is too much masturbation, exposure to pornography, or sexual abuse? I mean, I have some friends that are gay that were abused, and I think that they are afraid of people that are the same sex as their abuser, and that may have something to do with that one. I'll concede that might have something to do with it in some people's case,
but
we do not believe, and this came from a prophet, we do not believe that that is what, there's no Mormons that believe that those are the three reasons that you're gay, and that came from the dang prophet. So if we're willing to acknowledge that that's not, and that's from a prophet, and that's not right, then why are people having a struggle acknowledging that people are born gay and they are not making a decision to be attracted to somebody that's the opposite sex? Science is proving these things.
That is the church's reality. And to add on top of what you just brought up, about it being a choice, who would choose this?
To be a marginalized, persecuted minority.
Who wants to wake up in the morning saying, I really think that being trans sounds awesome?
Yeah.
This is, exactly. I want the persecution. I want the looks. I want the people's...
I'm going to deal with this.
Yeah, who wants to do that?
And I think people have this weird conception too. I think really uneducated people, that it's just like, you know, some people do just wake up one morning and they're like, you know, that would be fun to be trans. And then they just like go under the knife in one big surgery and they come out the other gender. No, it's
And 3 months later, process, they change their mind. You know? Oh my gosh, what have I done?
Yeah.
Becomes a news headline.
That ever happens? Come on, you know, like this is ridiculous.
I'm 5 years and going and I'm just getting surgery, which is one of the last, you know.
5 years, steps. It's been your whole life.
Well, of course.
But we finally put a name
transition
to
in
it.
Itself, it's not one just... You go under the knife and you pop out and it's like, hey, she now or he now. You know, it's steps. It's a process. It's a social change. You know, there's a whole literal just process of the entire thing, you know.
It's great. It's been a fascinating interview.
Yeah.
I like that you brought up the fact that you're open for questions. And open for... Because I think there are likely listeners of the podcast and viewers of this podcast who have questions.
Of course.
A million of them. So if you are listening to this podcast in a in the audio version, because we are recording this in a video and audio version. So if you are listening to this on our one of the podcast channels, we want to invite you over to our YouTube channel or our Facebook page. And if you're willing, Tyler and Drew as well, start typing your questions below. And we will start answering those through our Facebook channel.
Yeah.
That work?
Yeah, that works.
Pretty much no holds barred. You opened for anything?
It's part of the process, so.
I like it. And I want to invite you to be open to understanding this topic as well. I know this is sensitive, and especially some trans people have really difficult times talking about this because it's either too sensitive or very middle of the road, very left, very right. I'm open to having a very open dialogue. That's what I really hope happens. We have an opportunity to ask questions, even if they seem trivial or somewhat ridiculous. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it.
And I've dealt with teenagers, so I've probably gotten about all the interesting questions you could imagine, because they don't have as much of a filter, you know, as maybe an adult would. But
and thank goodness, because the new generations, the younger kids, they don't, you know, I've had a ton of kids that are friends and they're like, I'm transgender, and everybody's like, okay,
what's great. For lunch?
Yeah, they know what it means too.
That's
which
it,
is
and
different.
And the, you know, the things are changing.
You know, you brought up Elder Ballard, and I think that was a very valid point to bring up Elder Ballard's quote that he gave at BYU. He wouldn't have said, we have to do better, if he didn't believe that we were not doing good enough.
The best. Yeah.
He specifically said, we must do better than we have done in the past. Yeah. Which means there's an acknowledgement that things were done wrong, and that the understanding of this topic wasn't complete, and it's time to start figuring it out. Yeah. I appreciate both of you giving us the opportunity to understand this topic a little better.
Of course.
Because it's through stories just like yours that we're able to understand and do better. When we know better, we do better.
Right.
And I also appreciate that you were willing to give us the opportunity to ask questions and get your perspective on more of the trans topics.
Yeah, of course.
Great. So if you do have a question for Tyler or Drew, we invite you to comment below, and we will follow along throughout the podcast and answer those questions through our Facebook channel. It's been another fascinating episode on Latter-day Stories podcast. We are thankful that you followed us both in the audio version and in the video version. If you are listening to the podcast on one of the podcast channels, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or another, we invite you to help us to rank the podcast by sharing it and giving us a rating. If you give us a rating and also comment on one of the podcast channels, it'll allow us to build our ranking a little higher. That makes it easier for people to find this podcast in the future. And also, if you are following us on one of the video channels through YouTube, we invite you to subscribe to find out when we post new videos, which we try to do every week. And on our Facebook page, you can always follow in the conversation in real time as we discuss topics just like this. The Latter-day Stories podcast is your opportunity to understand the intersection of LGBT Avenue and LDS Street, to give you the opportunity to continue writing your Latter-day story.
This episode is a production of Latter-day Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter-day Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now by texting the word STORIES to 77948. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter-day Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.